Hey there, it's me, Lisa Lillian, also known as Hungry Girl. Welcome to yet another episode of the Chew the Right Thing podcast. Today, I am flying solo without Jamie and Mikey, but I do have a special guest. It is Robert J. Davis, Dr. Robert J. Davis, who you all know as the Healthy Skeptic. Robert has been a longtime contributor to the world of Hungry Girl, and what he is so good at is giving us the scoop, the true scoop on all things relating to fitness, diet, exercise, and health in general. He's the author of books like Fitter Faster, The Smart Way to Get in Shape in Just Minutes a Day, and Supersized Lies, How Myths About Weight Loss Are Keeping Us Fat, and The Truth About What Really Works. He's always fun to talk with, and he is super brilliant and enlightening. And today in particular, we are going to be doing some myth blasting in the world of fitness. So I am very excited to welcome Robert to the show, and he is also going to be giving away a copy of his book that he will sign for one lucky listener. So stay tuned for the interview and for a chance to win. All right, let the myth blasting begin. Robert, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here.
It is good to see you. Robert has a new haircut. It looks good. Okay, we're going to jump in. As always, you are so great at this myth blasting. I mean, you know the real deal about everything. And today we're focusing on exercise. You look very fit, by the way.
Thank you. I do my best.
Yeah, and we're all going to learn how to be fit from you. So first question I have, and this has to do with a myth. People think that you need to exercise to lose weight and that there's some major correlation between exercising and weight loss. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, I like to say if there were a pill that could do everything that exercise can do, from decreasing your risk of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, depression, improving your mood, improving your sex life, the list goes on and on and on. We would be clamoring for that pill, right? But the one thing that exercise cannot do very well is to help you lose weight. Yet, too often, that's the main reason that people exercise, is to try to lose weight, and they are often disappointed. So why is that? Well, first of all, it's pretty simple. And that is that the kind of exercise that most of us do, things like going for a brisk walk, taking a yoga class, going for a bike ride, simply doesn't burn that many calories. And so if you think about it, let's say a 150-pound person goes for a 30-minute walk, you're going to burn maybe 140 calories. That's what you get from, say, a can of soda. Or if you step it up a bit and go ride a stationary bike for, say, 30 minutes, that same 150-pound person, you may burn 250 calories. That's what you get from, what, say, a Snickers bar, something like that. So the point is there's not a lot of bang for your buck. There's not a lot of payoff for all that work. And so what happens is that people start exercising, they get frustrated because they find they're not losing weight. And the problem is that they're thinking of that in the wrong way. Now, yes, you can lose some weight from exercise, but you have to step it up more. So we're talking about a lot of exercise, more than most people are able or willing to do, 400 or 500 calories from an exercise session 4 or 5 days a week. So you're talking about instead of 30 minutes, doing a brisk walk for 90 minutes or jogging an 8-minute mile for 30 minutes. That's a lot of exercise. Mm-hmm. And then over time, the problem is that your body compensates. Your appetite may increase. Your metabolism slows down, so your body essentially fights you. So over time, it's not a great way either to lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, I just remember my mom and her friends, like, they would go for walks, and they'd walk for, like, a half hour really slowly. Then they'd go out for pie.
Right.
Right, and it's like, okay, so maybe they burned 150 calories on the walk. They ate 400 calories of pie. Net-net, they were definitely not going
that
to be losing weight.
That math does not work out well, right?
The math does not work out. And also exercise makes us hungrier.
Right, right. And that's the body's way. Essentially, it's called a compensatory mechanism. The body is trying to protect you from wasting away. Obviously, it works if you're chasing your dinner, or it works if you're...
I haven't done that in a long time.
It works under certain circumstances, but it's not going to work for us in the environment we live in. Now, let me just also say, and this is an important point, while exercise is not great at helping you lose weight, it is very important when it comes to keeping weight off that you've lost and preventing weight gain in the first place. Studies do show that exercise is very important for preventing weight gain, and it can be very effective. We're talking about the kind of exercise that's recommended for good health, going for a brisk walk at least 5 days a week, doing a yoga class, that kind of exercise is very important when it comes to preventing weight gain. It's also important, I should add, when it comes to improving your body composition, that is the ratio of muscle to fat. So you can increase your muscle, decrease fat relative to muscle, and that can do several things. It can improve your appearance. It can also decrease visceral fat, which is the bad kind of fat, the kind that's thought to be most harmful, typically indicated by a big waist. And so I think that there are clearly weight-related benefits that come with exercise, but it doesn't necessarily help you lose weight. And that's an important distinction.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people just think, I exercise, I lose weight. You know, like that's what a lot of people were thinking. Oh, I'm joining a gym, I'm automatically going to lose weight. But when you say that it helps you from gaining weight, or it will prevent you from, you know, it's good for maintenance, do you think that's still just a calorie game? Is it just basically like you're burning an extra 200 or 250 calories, so you could eat a few bites of this or that every now and then? Or is there another reason for it?
It could be, but I think the reasons aren't fully understood. It may have to do with keeping your metabolism revved up a bit. That probably has something to do with it. It may have something to do, as you say, with calorie burning as well. But the studies are pretty consistent on this as to this being a very important thing if people want to say they've gone on a diet and lost weight to keep that weight off. But I think, you know, another important point here is that you made the point about people saying it's not helping me lose weight and they're frustrated. I think it's important here to say we need to go into exercise with the right mindset. And that is to say, to not think of it as a weight loss tool, but to think of it as a way to enhance the quality of our lives, to help us feel better, to help us deal with stress, to help us feel more empowered, to help improve our health over time. Those kinds of benefits, I think, are the reasons that we should think about exercise. And those, actually, studies show those kinds of reasons are more likely to motivate us to continue exercising as opposed to thinking of it as a weight loss tool. Studies show that when people think of it as a way to lose weight, they're more likely to quit than if people think of it as a way to enhance the quality of their life.
Interesting. And you do feel better when you exercise. And a lot of times you feel like eating better. You just feel like you're taking care of yourself.
That is a very important point, because the studies also show that it can improve people's ability to make good choices when it comes to what they eat. And so that's an important point as well.
Okay. Next up, I have heard conflicting things about the best time to exercise. Is it true that morning is absolutely the best time to get your exercise in?
Well, you know, we hear that all the time. Actually, there are fitness gurus. You go online and say that you should exercise in the morning. And certainly for some people, that's the best time to exercise because they have fewer distractions. They may exercise in the morning and feel energized throughout the day. But I have to tell you, for me, that would be impossible. As much as I exercise, and as you know, I'm an avid exerciser, if I had to get up at 6 a.m. and exercise, I would never exercise just because it's not my time of day. I couldn't do that. So the answer is that that is not necessarily the best time of day to exercise. If you're asking biologically, physiologically, when is the best time to exercise? Interestingly, it's late in the afternoon. That's when strength tends to be greatest. It's when flexibility is greatest. It's when perceived exertion, which is how hard we feel we are working, is lowest. And it tends to be greatest. And the thinking is that that's because our body temperature gradually rises throughout the day and peaks in the late afternoon. So people typically perform best at exercise late in the afternoon. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get a great workout in the morning, another time of day. But if you're asking when sort of the peak time is biologically, physiologically, it's late in the afternoon.
That's interesting. So like if you exercise in the morning and you do some cardio, you're not revving up your metabolism anymore for the rest of the day?
No, that's not true. You're certainly revving it up, but it's just that you're more likely to get to have the greatest, to be able to exercise the most easily, at least most people, if you do it late in the afternoon. Now, I should add there, your body can adapt. So if you always exercise first thing in the morning, your body's going to adapt to that and be more used to doing that. And so you will perform perfectly fine first thing in the morning. So I think that the bottom line here is that the best time of day to exercise is whenever you can fit it in.
I was going to say, whenever you agree to do it. Don't say, oh, if I can't do it in the afternoon, oh, well, it doesn't pay. I shouldn't do it in the morning.
No, absolutely. If whenever right. you can fit it in. And I would add, that includes at nighttime. Sometimes you hear don't exercise at night because it will interfere with your sleep. Interestingly, studies have by and large failed to prove that. So for most people, if they exercise, if the only time or the best time for you in terms of your schedule is the evening, do it then. Now, if you find you can't sleep, then you can modify that. But don't be scared off from trying exercise in the evening because you're afraid that you won't be able to sleep.
No, it puts me to sleep.
Well, some people
sometimes
have that effect.
It puts me to sleep while it's happening. Okay, is it true that you need to refuel after you exercise? Like, do you need carbs after you do cardio or after you do some strength training? Do you need protein? What is the relationship between food and refueling after exercise?
Well, sometimes we hear this, that there's certain magical foods that you should eat after you exercise. For example, for a while, the rage, you may have heard this with chocolate milk. It's supposedly the perfect food.
What?
Chocolate milk, because it's got the perfect ratio, supposedly, of carbs and
How
protein.
How did I not hear this?
You of all people.
But
that, and the point here is that may be great for athletes. If you're somebody, if you're an athlete and you've got multiple practices a day, that's fine. If you are exercising very vigorously in the heat, yes, you may need to refuel, but that's not the vast majority of us. The vast majority of us are going to go for a brisk walk. We're going to take a class at the gym. We're going to go take a yoga class. We do not need to refuel. And so it becomes a problem because you end up saying, well, I need to refuel. I need to go to get a muffin, or I need to go to Starbucks and get a caloric drink. And then, as you said earlier, you end up consuming more calories after your workout than you actually burn during the workout. So if you're concerned about your weight, this can obviously be a real problem. The other thing that we often hear related to strength training, you mentioned this, is that you need to get protein within the one-hour window after you exercise. Studies have shown that this is not necessarily true. What's more important is how much protein you consume throughout the day, not necessarily right after you exercise. So if you get adequate protein throughout the day, then it doesn't really matter when you get it. You don't necessarily need to focus on getting it right after you do strength training, because the thinking has been, well, you need to make sure you get enough protein to maximize your gains from strength training. That's really not, by and large, been proven by the studies. It's more important to focus on getting enough protein overall.
And what is enough protein? Like, I'm such a protein fan. I probably have twice as much protein as I need in a day. So I've heard we don't even need as much protein as people think we need.
Well, a good rule, and there's some different formulas that are used, but I think a good rule of thumb is essentially to take your weight and divide by half, and that's the number of grams of protein you need. So if someone weighs, say, 150 pounds, then they would need roughly 75 grams of protein a day. And some people that are weightlifters or trying to greatly increase muscle mass might say it's maybe 0.9 or 1 in terms of the ratio. Mm-hmm. But for most people, 0.5 is a good goal to shoot for.
And that's not very much protein, because if you think about it, so let's say it's 75 grams. What's 75 times 4? 71, 300 calories worth of?
Yes.
300 calories that you consume is protein.
Yeah.
Calories or are protein calories. That's not a lot.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like,
yeah,
300 calories of steak is nothing.
Right.
300 calories even of chicken is nothing.
Right.
So we don't need that much protein.
And it's not
too
that,
bad.
And you
I'm
say
so
it's
eating.
Not that hard to get also, I would add, from regular food. Some people think, well, I need to
like
drink protein shakes and
no.
eat bars and things like that. Yes, sometimes you may need to do that. But in most cases, if you focus on getting good sources of protein in your diet, chicken, fish, red meat, if you eat that, beans, other sources like that, nuts, you can get adequate protein from a regular diet.
And what about drinks? Like, there's all this talk about water. You and I have talked repeatedly, endlessly about how much water we need. Some people are replacing their water with sports drinks like Gatorade or with other things like Crystal Light. Let's talk a little bit about first sports drinks and drinks that have electrolytes and how necessary those are. And let's segue into water.
Okay. So sports drinks, Gatorade, the other sports drinks, have been very successful at marketing themselves to everyone, making us think that if we do any exercise at all, we need them. And in fact, that's not true. They have these electrolytes, as you say, which are minerals like sodium, potassium, magnesium, which are lost during exercise, particularly vigorous exercise. But again, as I said earlier, most of us don't exercise in a way that there's significant loss of those, that we need those minerals. Now, in the past, those beverages tended to be very high in sugar and high in calories. And so that's a real problem. People are exercising and consuming those beverages. They're getting a lot of sugar, a lot of calories, clearly counterproductive and detrimental.
Right. If you're playing football, it's another story, right?
Right. Newer versions of them, of course, are calorie free, but they also come that they come with artificial sweeteners, which is a whole other issue. So I would say that overall, for most people, these beverages on the whole are not only unnecessary, but potentially counterproductive, whether they contain calories and sugar or not, and you don't need them. Water is perfectly fine. Now, the question is, as you say, you know, how much water do you need? The answer to that is that we need to keep drinking before, during, and after exercise. Some people say that. That's the advice. You need to make sure that you're stay ahead of your thirst, right? That's sometimes what we hear when you're exercising. The truth is that that's not really necessary, again, for the kind of exercise that most of us do. That thirst is a perfectly good guide. We have this exquisite mechanism that works very well for most people to tell us when we need to drink, and that's our thirst. And so studies interestingly show that in athletes who drink according to thirst, they are more likely to perform well in physical activity compared to those who chug continuously during their activity. So we have that people actually perform a little bit better if they drink according to their thirst, potentially. And for most people, if they drink a lot, it's not going to be a huge problem. They're just going to pee out what they don't need. Mm-hmm. But in certain circumstances, it can be detrimental. People can essentially develop what's called hyponatremia if they drink too much water. That is, if they're constantly chugging water during relatively high-intensity exercises, develop this condition called hyponatremia, which can be very serious. It can lead to seizures. It can lead to vomiting, even death. And so this has been increasingly common in marathon runners, in people doing hot yoga, and people doing hiking. Again, it doesn't apply to most people, but it can happen.
Right.
And so people need to be aware that it's possible to drink too much water when you're exercising. And so the idea here, again, is to have water available, drink when you're thirsty, but don't force yourself to keep constantly chugging water while you're exercising.
Okay. But in general, most people, it's good to have 6 to 8 glasses of water a day and, you know, keep yourself hydrated.
Keep yourself hydrated.
I don't want to scare people into thinking that
they shouldn't drink a lot of water. No, and I think hyponatremia is a relatively unusual thing, but it does happen. And so I should also add, it's particularly important if you are exercising, obviously, in a hot climate. You need to be particularly careful about getting enough water. Older people, too, interestingly, have a diminished sense of thirst. So they need to be careful as well to make sure they're drinking enough water. But overall, for most people, thirst is a good guide when you're exercising as to when you need to drink.
Okay, you hit on something that's interesting. As you get older, you don't feel thirsty?
Yes, you may not feel, your thirst mechanism may not work as well. So you may not feel as thirsty as a younger person. So you may not be as aware that you need to drink water. So sometimes older people need to be more cognizant of the fact that they need to drink water.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about targeted exercises. I mean, there a lot of people say I'm only doing A, B, and C because I want to make my butt look like this, or I want to make my stomach look like that, or I want to do these certain leg lifts. How realistic is it that you can target and fix, for lack of a better word, certain parts of your body?
Well, I wish that were true. And certainly that's the whole basis on things like the Thighmaster and those kinds of old
devices. Wait, the Thighmaster? That doesn't work?
I don't see a lot of evidence that it does, but it operates on the principle essentially of what's called spot reduction, which is that you can target those areas. And if, as you say, if you do a bunch of crunches, then you can get flat abs. Or if you do leg lifts, then you can get thinner thighs. And unfortunately, that is not the way the body works. You cannot. First of all, those exercises don't typically burn a lot of calories. But secondly, is that, you know, where you lose fat is really dependent. We can't really control it very well. It's dependent on things like your gender, on your age, on your genetics. And so trying to target where you're going to lose fat doesn't work. And so
unless you have a plastic surgeon do it for you.
There you go. That's the one way.
Not that I have any experience in that. I really, truly do not. But I see it. I see it on social media.
Yep. So the strategy needs to be to lose body fat overall. You do that by focusing on your diet, on focusing on a comprehensive exercise program that includes both aerobic and strength training. And that's the way to get lost in those the places that you want.
But crunches don't work for your stomach?
Well, crunches will work if you're lean to begin with and you want to increase muscle definition, let's say, in your abs. And yes, crunches will help increase definition. But if you have fat around that area, as the vast majority of us do, it's not going to decrease the fat in that area. Again, that's going to require exercise, whole body exercise and diet, as opposed to just targeting that area. And I should add, let's say you do a bunch of crunches every day and you do 100 crunches every day and you're not working the opposing muscle group, which is your back, you can actually do damage, because if you work your abs and not the opposing muscle group, which is your back, you could actually have pain, you could have injury to your back. So it's important to think about the balance too, and not overworking one part of your body and underworking the opposite part of the body.
This is so complicated. You're making me not want to exercise, Robert.
Don't want to do that. By all means, you got to exercise.
Kidding. I do a lot of simple exercising. We'll talk a little more about that in a little while. But I want to know, because I've always been jealous of runners. You are a runner. You're always like, I'm going for a run. It's 112 degrees. Robert's going for a run. What about running in women? Like, does running ruin your knees, your hips, or is it okay?
The short answer is it's okay. Now, that's not to say everybody has to run. It's not optimal for everybody, and not everybody likes to run, and you shouldn't force yourself to go run if it's not your thing. But that said, fear of arthritis, fear of ruining your knees should not be a reason to keep you from running, because the studies interestingly show, study after study, these are long-term studies that followed runners over years or decades, have found that people that run consistently are less likely to have knee problems, are less likely to have arthritis than people who don't run. And the reason is thought to be that running actually increases the muscle around the joints, improves bone around the joints, enhances bone so that there's less stress on those, say, the knee joints, and so you're less likely to injure those joints. Now, that said, there are clearly some kind of people that need to, types of people that need to be careful. People that weigh more, there's going to be more force on those joints. They need to be careful. People have a history of knee injury or a history of joint problems, they need to be particularly careful from running. And certainly there are other problems, all kinds of other problems you can have from running, everything from, you know, shin splints to plantar fasciitis to Achilles tendon. But when it comes specifically to joint issues or fear of arthritis, there's not evidence that running will ruin your knees, and there's evidence to the contrary that it may help prevent arthritis.
Even if you start later in life, like, is it ever too late to start to become a runner?
It's not too late, but you obviously need to be careful. You shouldn't do too much too quickly. You need to start slowly, and you need to obviously, I think it's always a good idea to work with a medical professional first to get a checkup to make sure you're and don't have any underlying conditions to be concerned about. But generally, yes, it's never too late to start off, but be sure you start off slowly.
Okay, so it's not too late for me. I'm a big
walker.
It's never
too late.
I'm a walker. I have a hard time. I just get really, like, winded. I get so tired when I run, but I love walk. I could walk 25 miles a day. Like, I love walking. And is walking enough to keep you fit as you age?
Well, walking is excellent exercise. Walking is a great thing to do. And everybody should, and again, you don't need to run. You don't need to feel you have to run. And walking instead of running is fantastic exercise. But that said, as good as it is, walking alone is not enough, particularly as we get older. The issue is that as we get older, we lose muscle. And starting, unfortunately, at age 30, and it gets worse as we get older, we lose muscle. So that as people get older, that's why people have challenges doing everyday activities, getting up from a chair, walking up steps, just doing everyday activities. We essentially get more feeble as we get older because we have this muscle loss. And what strength training can do, if you supplement your aerobic activity like walking with strength training, is help fend off this feebleness as we get older, to help slow down or stop this muscle loss as we get older. So strength training is imperative for slowing this muscle loss as we get older. So that's why it's so important, particularly as we get older, to include strength training. Now, I know that's intimidating for a lot of people. They think, okay, I can go for a walk. That's relatively easy. But what kind of exercises am I supposed to do? I don't really want to go to the gym. Am I supposed to lift weights? I don't want to bulk up. You know, all these things keep people from doing strength training, which is perfectly understandable. But the truth is that you don't necessarily have to go to a gym. You don't have to lift weights. There are other things you can use. Resistance bands.
I was just going to say, can we talk about things like resistance bands are great.
Yep.
And we should link to some on the show page. But what things can we do at home? Like, I've heard things like stand up, sit down, lean against a wall. Are there any little exercises you can tell us about right now?
Sure. But I would say, first of all, the best thing to do is go to YouTube, to sources that seem legitimate, trustworthy, and there are all kinds of videos you can look at online. But just a few examples, you mentioned one: stand up, sit down from a chair. You can use, these are called body weight exercises. You can do, if you want to get on your knees and do push-ups or do push-ups against a wall. You can do squats. you know, body squats where you get into squat, you squat down. Again, doesn't involve any weight. So there are a number of things like that you can do, or you can use household objects. You can use bottles of water as weights and lift them up over your head, or to do bicep curls. But the important thing here is to have a plan and understand what you're doing. And that requires getting a little education. Again, you can go online and look at videos. You can take a class at a gym if that's available to you, or if you're able to hire somebody to help you at least get started, a personal trainer. But it's important to have some kind of guidance. So number one, you know what you're doing. You know what exercises you need to do to work the major muscle groups. And you need to understand how to do them safely so you don't get injured. But if you have that kind of guidance so that you figure out what's right for you, then you can get started. And it's not intimidating. It really isn't. Once you know what you're doing, and you can get started on this kind of program. So I think with a little bit of homework and a little bit of investigation, people can find a way to incorporate this kind of strength training a couple times a week. And again, you never have to set foot in a gym if that's not your thing.
I love that you can just look on YouTube and learn some exercises.
But
you can get anything. You can learn. Do you have any favorite channels or any favorite, gurus that you can point us to?
No, not really. I just think there's so many there. I think you just Google it and you can find all kinds of credible fitness professionals that are giving, I think, very clear instructions on what to do.
Okay, great. All right. Now for this next part of the interview, I just have a few questions that rather than spend a lot of time, let's just do a little bit of a speed round. There's a few topics I've been curious about and I just want like quick answers.
Okay.
First up, we have HIIT high intensity workouts versus longer, less intense workouts. What do you think?
So HIIT or high intensity interval training can be an excellent way, a time efficient way to get in exercise. You can exercise sometimes as little as 5 or 10 minutes and get great benefits. Sometimes benefits that are as great as you can get from steady state exercise going for say 30 or 40 minutes. But it means going really hard. It can be unpleasant for that for those 5 or 10 minutes. You got to go really hard. But you can adapt it to your fitness level. So if you're used to, you're a walker, then you want to walk really fast. You don't need to run really quickly, but you walk faster for those 5 or 10 minutes, for example. So it can be adapted to your fitness level, but it's a really excellent way to work out more efficiently. It can be very effective.
Okay, I have such limited time. I need to go back and talk about what are some things that we can do other than walking really fast for 5 or 10 minutes that really pack a punch. Anything else?
Yes. You can jump if that's something that you're physically able to do. If you don't even have to have a jump rope if that's something that you're not able to do.
Just jump up and
jump
down.
Jump as though you're jumping on a jump rope. That can be effective. Step up, step down. That can be something. Just something that gets your heart rate up like that. If you have access to a bike, to pedal relatively quickly on a bike, relatively hard on a bike, that can be effective.
So run in place fast.
If you're able to do that, yes.
Okay. Brush your teeth really hard.
If you check out my book, Fitter Faster, there are a number of options in there that help you do just that.
Okay. Let's talk about sleeping. I keep hearing if you don't get enough sleep, you're going to gain weight. Is that true? Do you need a certain amount of sleep to keep your weight down?
Yes. A number of studies have shown that there is a strong correlation between the amount of sleep we get and our ability to maintain a healthy weight. People that are sleep deprived, that is people who get, say, 6 or fewer hours of sleep a night routinely, are more likely to put on weight and to be heavier. So yes, the short answer is yes, there is a definite connection between the two. So getting enough sleep is an important part of maintaining a healthy weight.
I notice when I don't sleep enough, I'm really hungry. Is that like part of it, like appetite?
Yes. Studies have found when they lock people up in a lab and follow them and deprive them of sleep, those people end up consuming more calories than people who are getting adequate sleep, who are allowed to get adequate sleep. So yes, it's thought that there's something, it triggers something in our brain perhaps to seek out more calories when we get less sleep.
All right. Final question. We can only keep one exercise. What is it? Like one thing?
The problem with that question is that you have to do things that involve, if you're going to do one exercise, both strength training and aerobic activity. So if you can come up with a strength training exercise, which is going to get your heart rate up, for example, jump rope, that would be something if you're able to do because you're working your leg muscles as well as increasing your heart rate.
What about those crazy, like, what do you call those? The squat thrusts? What are you, those crate? Those are the worst, but you do everything and you feel like you're going to die.
Burpees would be an example of that.
Burpees. Right. I want to learn how to do burpees and just do those for 10 minutes a day.
Burpees are great exercise. I just think the point is there's no perfect exercise because when you think about strength training, you need to work different muscle groups, whether it's your upper body or lower body. There are exercises like burpees that work both. So that they're involving your upper and lower body. But not everybody can do burpees. That's a hard exercise to do.
I haven't done them since third grade.
They're great exercise. But again, the important thing here is to remember when you're thinking about if you've got limited time to try to do exercises that are going to, again, involve both strength training and aerobic. Because even people who are avid exercisers often give short shrift to strength training. And that's something that is a mistake.
Anything else you want to add? You are always just so good at just giving us information that is so clear, so easy to understand, and it inspires us. Anything I forgot to ask you?
No, you're, as always, ask great questions. I would just say that when it comes to exercise, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. In other words, do whatever you can. If you can't get out there every day or 3 days a week or 4 days a week, do it when you can. If you don't have 30 minutes, you just have 10 minutes, get out there for 10 minutes and do something. So I think often people feel like, well, I don't have enough time or I can't do it enough days of the week, and they don't do anything. And I think the point here is just to move your body however you can, whenever you can, and you'll see benefits from doing that.
And Robert, where can people find you? Like, where are the best places to follow you on social media? Tell us a little bit about the books that they can buy and learn more about what you do. Just rattle them all off.
So you can find me on my website, healthyskeptic.com. You can find me on social media at Robert Davis, on Facebook at Robert Davis Healthy Skeptic, or on Instagram at Healthy Skept, S-K-E-P-T. And my books, you mentioned Fitter Faster, as well as Supersize Lies, which is about weight loss, as in my other books, are available on Amazon.
Great. Thank you. As always, thank you so much for being here.
As always, it was fun. Thank you.
Good stuff. Okay. As promised, Robert is giving away a copy of his book. We're going to go with Fitter Faster. If you want an autographed copy of that, you can send a text to 805-380-8075. That's 805-380-8075. You'll reach Mikey directly at that number, so just tell us why you want to win or just type pick me. Good luck, and don't forget to tune in to the next episode. I'm Lisa Lillian, also known as Hungry Girl. Till next time, chew the right thing.